Greetings, dear ones, and it's time for another midweek miracle episode. I've been so lucky this summer to have lots of time to produce podcast episodes, and that means I've been bringing you two every week. And while it's been a lot of work, it's also been a lot of fun. It has been utterly thrilling meeting so many diverse human beings and bringing their stories to you all. And this week is no exception. I'm going to introduce you to Carl Beckstrand. Now, a little bit about him. He's a college media professor and he runs Premio Publishing, which boasts over 200 multicultural offerings. And we talk about it a little bit later in the episode, but Carl is also a writer and an author. And to be honest, he is prolific. And as a fellow author, I was kind of left gobsmacked at how much he's put out into the world. He has many fabulous ancestors, and they've all immigrated from so many different places in the world: South Africa, Sweden, Scotland, Switzerland, France, England, and Ireland. And he's lived so many other places. He truly is what they call a Heinz 57 of the world. So a mix of so many different cultures and countries. It was just kind of really fun for me to get to know who he is as a human being. I do want to let you know there is a trigger warning for this episode. Carl does discuss child sexual assault, and it ties in with his miracle story and how he came to understand himself and heal from that legacy of childhood sexual assault. It is a powerful episode. It is a powerful story. But for those of you who have tender hearts, this story that Carl tells, if it might affect you negatively, please do take care of yourself and take care of your heart. So now, this very next episode and this incredibly powerful and potent story from Carl Beckstrand.
And yeah, I had a rough time dealing with such an adult topic at such a young age, trying to figure out who I was and what I should be doing. And then as a young adult, finding that I was actually out of control, that I was being sexual with people that I didn't even want to be with and couldn't stop. And so for me, transformation happened kind of contrary to my efforts, because like everything I tried to get out of the compulsion didn't work. Nothing worked.
If you had to go to a party or a conference and you had to introduce yourself, how would you do that?
I'm a writer. Didn't know I was a writer when I was young because I didn't like reading or writing when I was a kid. So they were chores. I think I was exposed to a lot of boring textbooks. But in college, when I should have been doing homework, I kept getting story ideas. So I would scribble them down and set them aside and think, well, maybe when I'm older and retired, maybe I'll get published. But I met a publisher early, so it was great.
That's amazing. Do you have a specific genre in which you work?
Most of my books are children's picture books, Spanish, English, but I have biographies, short stories, a Western novel, self-help, a lot.
Okay, that is astonishing. I mean, most writers that I know choose like science fiction or fantasy, but you're prolific. You're very prolific, I think.
Yeah, I have 30 books out.
Oh my gosh. And also what does your company do? Can you describe that?
So, we specialize in multicultural kids books, but I also have other sites, you know, sites for adults. So like relationship self-help or biographies or, fiction for adults.
Do you have one that's near and dear to your heart? One specific one?
Yes, I had a book that a publisher requested years ago. They asked if I knew any true stories of people who immigrated when they were children. And I have a bunch of those in my family history. And the one that I wrote was called Anna's Prayer. It's about my great-great-aunt who immigrated alone from Sweden. Actually, she came with her sister, but they had to separate and go to different states. So she arrived. She was 10 years old. She arrives at her destination in the USA at midnight. And the person who's supposed to meet her didn't show up. And she can't even ask for help because she doesn't speak English. Yeah, it's an amazing story because she says this prayer, you know, she's like, help. And she's just expecting somebody who speaks Swedish, but it's actually a lot better than that.
Oh, my gosh. Why did they have to go to different states?
Because the older sister had contracted to work in Idaho. And so my great-great-aunt who came to Utah alone, her aunt was supposed to meet her, but she never got the letter telling her the date when she was going to arrive.
Oh my gosh. And it's not like, well, of course, this is a silly thing to say, but it's not like you can just text and say, hey, where are you? You know, it's like at some point you're there, you've arrived and you're like, do I write a letter now? I mean, and how long is that going to take to get there? And like, what do I do? And at 10 years old, I mean, presumably she got to where she was supposed to be going eventually.
Eventually, yes.
Oh, dear. I can't even imagine that at 10. I think about myself at 10, and I don't know if I would have been able to deal with that. It must have made her, as they say today, super fierce later on in life.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, well, they were tough already.
So. Oh, yeah. I can't even imagine. My father's lineage is Swedish and Norwegian, and you know, my last name is Rudberg, and he did some genealogical research several years ago, and they found out that my family comes from this place where there was a red mountain. So like a mountain made of red clay or something. So Rudberg. But I tell everyone it's because we were so fierce and strong and brave. It's really drenched in the blood of our Viking victims. You know, we're just totally this fierce clan. Usually people laugh at that point and, you know, pat me on the head. But I do think names are really fascinating.
Yeah. Mine's a made up name. There were too many Knutsons in the Swedish army. And so the leaders told my ancestor, change your name. So he said Beckstrand. Made it up.
What? Okay, wait. Okay, that's... I didn't even know that was allowed.
Yeah, I think it means bank river, because you must have been raised on the bank of a river.
Okay, but then if you want to... That makes it a little challenging to trace genealogy, doesn't it?
Yeah, but you know, it's difficult in Sweden anyway, because there's so many Knutsons and Larsons, and you know, everybody has similar names.
Okay, yeah. Well, I've never been to either Sweden or Norway. It's on my bucket list to go there. But it is fascinating what you discover when you start going back in time. I know through marriage in my family, we're related to a female author who's a Nobel Prize winning authoress. And I can't think of her name right now. She's very famous in Sweden, I believe. I believe she's Swedish. And I can't think of her name. I feel so bad. But through marriage, not through blood. So it's kind of like when you're hanging out with your best friend who's like a famous person and you're like, I know her, and you get to rub elbows, but just over the centuries. And then, you know, of course, there's all sorts of apocryphal stories where one of our ancestors went to a village meeting and got mad and stabbed someone he disagreed with at the meeting. I don't know if everyone lived or someone died, but I thought, oh dear, there's a little bit of a darker story there.
You know, you brought up an interesting topic. My mother was an avid genealogist, and I just thought it was boring dates and places. But this story, Anna's Prayer, once I found it and wrote it out and it got published, I was hooked. So I ended up researching 7 generations of my family's stories, because it was the stories that really grabbed me.
And how did you do that exactly? Because one would presume that some of these people had already passed away. Did you interview relatives, or how did that happen?
So a lot of my relatives kept journals or diaries. And the ones that didn't, it was kind of like a detective thing. You know, I would find letters from them, and I would use their parents' journal or their siblings, and I would just kind of piece together, cobble together a history for them, because I had sufficient ancestors that did keep journals.
Well, and that's something that I really find enchanting, and that I think, you know, even this podcast, right? I'm asking people for their stories. One of the things that I just find really enchanting about other human beings is that we all have, we're comprised of so many different stories, right? Stories that people tell about us, but the stories we make up about ourselves, the stories of what happens in our life, the adventures that we've gone on. And I just can't get enough of that. Yeah. So, I mean, I will just probably go to the ends of the earth to hear other people's stories. So it's really fun to meet someone else that that's into it as well, because, you know, I always lament there are so many billions of people in the world right now, and every single one of them has a story. And I know that I'm never going to be able to actually access or listen to all of those stories, but still it makes me happy to know that all these stories are happening every day all around me, and they're still unfolding for all the billions of people. But I think that sounds utterly thrilling for me to like dive in, read people's journals, and like read what their daily life was like, or maybe their daily week or their weekly life was like, what affected them, what concerned them, what occupied their mind. What was the most surprising thing you learned?
Oh boy. That two of my grandparents were immigrants. I knew that my grandmother was born in South Africa, but I hadn't realized till I was an adult that my grandfather on the other side of the family was born in Canada.
Your family's from all over.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
So fun. And it's fun to see what their lives were like before technology. You know, just getting across the ocean was no small feat. And that a lot of them immigrated as kids by themselves. You're just like, wow.
Well, yeah, I think it's really interesting to note that so long ago, it wasn't considered that odd or that strange to put a 10-year-old on a ship by themselves. I mean, you just were like, oh, they can handle it. They'll be fine. And it's interesting to live in a culture now where so many kids are thought of as, I don't know, incapable of doing anything autonomously until they're 20, 21, 22, you know, sometimes not even then by some parents. But the kind of, I don't know, you could call it desperation or confidence in your child or belief in God that everything would turn out okay, that your child would make it across the ocean, is just really remarkable. And I think astonishing.
Yeah, for me, it really gives you a sense of who you are and where you come from. Because when you see what your family did, the hard things that they did, you think, oh, well, I must be able to do hard things too.
In a religious household, or what did that look like for you as a kid?
Yeah, I was raised in San Jose, California, by a liberal Mormon and a conservative Mormon. So my dad was very conservative, several generations LDS, at Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And my mom was kind of like a recent convert because her parents weren't active in church. So as a teenager, she kind of converted really herself. And they clashed over politics, you know, and had different ways of doing things. But it was a great education just to live with those two individuals and see these different worldviews. And they both had faith, but they expressed it in their own ways.
I was going to ask you, once you said, you know, one was more conservative than the other, how the heck did they even get together?
I know. Pretty wild. But see, that was so educational to hear them dialogue and debate. you know, discuss the issues. If my parents had both been from the same political position, then I wouldn't have learned as much.
Did either of them ever move, you know, one way or the other?
Yeah, I think they both did. I think my dad became a little less conservative and my mom became a little less liberal.
That's so fascinating. I can't imagine, you know, especially in today in the States, when the media just portrays, you know, liberal and conservative and never shall the two meet in the middle. Just hearing about your parents' relationship kind of gives me a little bit of hope, frankly.
Yeah, well, they divorced.
Okay.
But, you know, they remained friends to the end.
Okay, sorry. Are you practicing Mormon?
Yes.
Okay. And are you in the middle, kind of?
Yeah, I think I am. I'm also LGBTQ. I'm gay. So that's the liberal side of me. But I'm kind of unusual, not just for a Latter-day Saint gay person, but just for a gay person in general. My history is really unusual. And my worldview is very different, based on what I've experienced and also my faith in God.
Do you mean it's unusual inside the tent of the Latter-day Saint tent, or do you mean just in general?
Yes, inside the Latter-day Saint tent, and then also in the LGBTQ tent. I'm an unusual individual.
Well, I mean, I'm a fan of unusual individuals. You have to know that. And I mean, I don't know. Can I ask you, what is the position or within the LDS church on LGBTQ issues?
My understanding is that God loves all his children. He loves everybody. And nothing takes him by surprise. You know, if you come out as gay to your parents, they may be shocked, but God's not surprised, right? The church doesn't do marriages between people of the same sex. We believe that marriage and family go on forever, or can, and that it's not like you have to marry, but it's very strongly emphasized. So, yeah, I've been in church with a man's arm around me, and people have been very kind and welcoming and warm. But yeah, we're not performing gay marriages. Now, where I'm different there is there's a lot of gay Mormons. A lot of them expect to be able to get married in the church at some point. And I don't think that's ever going to change in the church. But I do believe that in the eternities, I will likely be closest to a guy. I'm attracted to both men and women. I'm just more attracted to men.
I mean, I find that to be pretty progressive, frankly, only because, I mean, I went to seminary and kind of read up and witnessed the gamut, you know, of so many different religions and just how they've evolved over time and the social and cultural issues that they've wrestled with and tried to figure out. And in a world that changes so rapidly, right? Mm. Changes so rapidly. How do they pivot and stay true to their roots or whatever they think their roots are in the world and still be outward facing, right? Not just be inward facing to themselves. Because I think it's really important. Well, I'm projecting this onto churches and religions, but for me, it would be really important if I were the head of a religion, which let's hope that never happens because it sounds like way too much work. Hopefully. But if I was, yeah. I mean, I would want to be engaged in the world and be a part of the world and contribute, you know, in ways that were respectful and helpful and of service to people. And the world, it's changing so quickly now. I already feel like a dinosaur. I remember growing up in the 80s and they brought the first computers into my junior high and they were trying to teach us coding, which, you know, there was some success. I can't remember any of it, but I remember thinking, holy cow, I'm so cool. Like compared to my parents who were like, we don't even know what's going on anymore. I'm so cool. And now I'm at the age that they were. And I look at the kids and I'm like, I have no idea what's going on anymore. And I'm sure at some point they'll get to an age where they're like, we have no idea what's going on anymore. But even in that short amount of time, things have just changed so dramatically.
Yeah.
And I don't care that I don't know anything anymore. I'll leave that to the younger folks. But I do think it's important that if you're kind of shaping morals or ideas of spirituality or social justice or whatever, you should probably be on top of what's going on in the world. What's important to people or yeah. I don't know. Anyway, see, that was me just going off on a tangent. I don't know if you just noticed that.
No, we have a lot in common, I think.
Yeah. I was just talking to a friend and she said today is Pioneer Days.
Yes. That's a state holiday here in Utah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and everybody has the day off?
No, if you're a state employee, you do, but everybody else goes to work.
Okay. Okay. Got it.
I have a big parade and it's, yeah, people do fireworks just like the 4th of July. So we do it twice in July.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know that. And is it the same day every year?
Uh-huh. 24th.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Because the Mormon pioneers arrived here 24th of July, 1847.
1847. Okay. Okay.
But now it includes, you know, like the Spanish explorers and the Native Americans who were here, and it's kind of more inclusive now.
Well, I just can't impress upon my listeners enough just how strange and a really delightful way it is that you tackle all these different genres, because that is very, very unusual. Very unusual. It is. It really is. I mean, I've certainly heard of other authors who have had books created in the dozens, but usually they're all in a certain, like a detective novel, you know, like they do detective novels or sci-fi or what have you. Do you just go with the flow of what like surfaces in your brain?
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't really take credit because these stories will just attack me and they don't leave me alone until I write them.
So it's like they're little tiny nags. Yeah. Do you ever wonder where they come from?
Gosh. I have ideas. I actually think there are muses. So, and it's funny, I believe that if you get a really good idea and you don't act on it, somebody else on the planet will get it and act on it. So I've learned to kind of just jump on a good idea once I get it.
That is a true story. I remember hearing about, I think it was the Linnaean way of classifying animals, which is this really scientific way of like dividing up the tree of life and, you know, vertebrates, invertebrates, all of these things. And it was like this really ornate tree that was groundbreaking and earth shattering at the time. But at the exact same time, someone was making the point that it was almost like this idea or this concept was floating in the ether because this gentleman launched that idea. And almost at the same time, someone like 1,000 miles away launched the same idea. And so I think it's completely right. Mm-hmm. That when those ideas, when your muse is like, hey, and tapping you on the shoulder, you've got to jump on it because chances are that idea or that concept's floating out there and someone else will grab onto it.
Yep. Wright brothers, you know, there was somebody in France working on the same kind of stuff at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, I find that whole concept utterly fascinating. That's a whole other thing that I think is just absolutely fabulous. You should name your muse and just be like, my muse is a nag. It's a little nag that's like hovering over me.
Oh, waking me up at night.
Really?
Usually the stories come when I'm asleep. What? I was gonna sleep.
Wait, like in a dream or?
Or it'll just be like this idea and it'll just like get really big in my head till it wakes me up.
Wow. I've never heard of that before. That's actually really fascinating.
Yeah, it's weird. It is a nag.
Yeah. Do you ever just say, hey, can you just give me a moment, like a week, so I can just sleep and rest?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I'll like lamely scribble something down in the dark and in the morning try to figure out what it is that I wrote. I think when I was a kid, reading those boring textbooks at school or picture books, and so many of them were blonde-haired, blue-eyed kids. And I grew up in San Jose, which is very cosmopolitan. So I was like, this is not the real world. So I just, when I started to do some kids' books, it's like, yeah, they're going to reflect the real world. Plus, I lived in South America. I'm bilingual. So I mean, worked with a lot of different cultures.
Yeah, I think when I was a kid and growing up overseas, I just thought the world was that way. And then we came back to the States and it was so white and it was really strange for me and hard to navigate and challenging. And, you know, I thought the entire world was like my school overseas, which was every kind of kid under the sun. Nice. But not all places are like that. And I think it's important for kids of every kind, every kind of child, to see themselves represented in literature or on TV or what have you, comic books, whatever that looks like. And so it seems like would you call it a publishing company?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I worked with two publishers early on and then learned that I'd had enough to start my own company.
The central question of my podcast is, I would love to hear a story or stories, you can share more than one, where you feel like you've witnessed something magical or miraculous in your life, maybe even mysterious. Mm-hmm. Anything you'd like to share?
Yeah, I love this question. So thank you for asking it. My life has been about evolution and transformation. And I think each one of us, you hear people say often, oh, I'm just that way. That's just the way I am. But really, if someone were to look at their life, not just by decades, but by 5-year increments, even, they would see huge change. We just change. Even when we're not trying to change, we change. And I think it's awesome. So for me, one of the huge transformations that happened for me was I was exposed to sex when I was 8 years old. Kid was showing me sex and, I mean, being sexual, sex with me. And I didn't even know what it was. And that totally altered the course of my life. And you think, oh, that's just tragedy. And yeah, I had a rough time dealing with such an adult topic at such a young age, trying to figure out who I was and what I should be doing. And then as a young adult, finding that I was actually out of control, that I was being sexual with people that I didn't even want to be with and couldn't stop. And so for me, transformation happened kind of contrary to my efforts, because like everything I tried to get out of the compulsion didn't work. Nothing worked. And I had a church leader advise me to go to a group and talk to a group of people rather than just to him. And that was the last thing I wanted to do. But I found that as I was vocal about who I was and what was going on in my life, that the compulsive nature of what was happening changed. I feel like God stepped in. As soon as I could be honest about myself with other people, God stepped in. Because the fact that I am not a compulsive sex addict today wasn't my doing.
Yes, I actually was good friends with someone who, you know, he wouldn't talk about it. He wouldn't admit it. He was a very nice human being, but was a sex addict. I mean, I loved him desperately. His parents, I mean, he was probably like 23, 24, 25 at this time. He lived with his parents, and his parents, I could tell, were trying to help him, but he didn't want the help. And as a friend, it was really challenging to witness the kind of like this hunger inside of him that he couldn't control. Insatiable kind of need. And we parted ways a few months later after, you know, kind of, I couldn't keep up with his lifestyle. It was just too intense for me. Mm-hmm. And I often think about him and hope he's okay, because I thought to myself at that time, like, this is like a candle that's burning at both ends, but also in the middle. And there's no way that this is sustainable.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I want to be around to witness what it's going to look like when everything falls apart, which is a terrible thing to admit, but I could feel myself getting drawn into this, this kind of, I don't know how to describe it. So despite my love for my friend and my respect for my friend, it was starting to be too painful to witness. And I think, you know, especially at age 8, right, that this happened to you. And how as a child do you even begin to understand? You know, I just listened to an interview where this woman said, I mean, her father, basically, it was incest, having sex with her. But he just kept saying it was a gift. It was a gift. And so in her mind, there was nothing bad about it. It wasn't malignant. It wasn't malicious. It was something that was pure and born out of love. But then later on, when she got older and she went out into the world as an older person, she was hypersexual, and she was also relating to people in a way that was not healthy. Like, everything was about sex, and it was everything was transactional, because that's how it was and I was listening to a psychologist say, when these things happen to us, when we're so young and we're so little, that oftentimes as we get older or we age, we sort of visit those kind of actions or depredations on other people, because we ourselves are trying to work through what happened to us. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, a lot of sense. In fact, even when you were talking about having to withdraw from that friend, it's interesting. I've learned that most addiction is based in an unmet emotional need. And so when you have to withdraw for self-preservation, that's totally understandable. But often families will withdraw or withhold connection from an addict as a kind of punishment or incentive for them to do better. And what is really needed is better, more pure connection. Again, when you have to get away for your own sanity and health, then you got to do that. But it's so interesting. What I've learned about myself is that I was going from guy to guy to guy, trying to meet emotional needs sexually, and you just can't, it doesn't work. It's like eating when you're dehydrated. You know, you think you're hungry, but you're really dehydrated. And no amount of food is going to rehydrate you.
Yeah, it's really an interesting and challenging and heartbreaking thing to confront or engage with. But I do want to say that I want to say, first of all, that I'm so sorry that happened to you when you were 8, because in no universe does a child have any concept of what's happening around sexual act at that age. But I do want to say that I'm so grateful that you found this group of people.
Yeah.
Did you even know anything like that existed?
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm a freak in the gay tent, because I'm like evangelizing non-sexual relationships. And it's not because of my religion, and it's not because I think it's wrong, but I've experienced firsthand that as soon as I tried to relate with a guy non-sexually, there was this deep bond that I always yearned for and never found in sexual relating. And it lasts. And so I'm out there saying, yeah, there's actually something better than sex.
I mean, honestly, I am a massive fan of deep love for the other and deep intimacy without sex.
Yeah.
I think at that point, you can meet each other soul to soul.
Yeah.
And that kind of seeing and witnessing changes entire worlds.
Yeah.
And also has the potential to change someone else's story about themselves.
Yeah. It's so interesting you have questions about transformation, or we made it about transformation. And I think we were talking about muses, how people get the same idea at the same time. I think society as a whole is also evolving and growing. And yeah, there's a lot of garbage, but I think overall we're becoming more enlightened.
I do have to say it has been fascinating. Just going through my life these last few months, and I stopped drinking alcohol a few months ago. Just my body can't really deal with it. But I swear every time I turn around talking to a friend or getting introduced to someone or someone random on a podcast, a lot of people are stopping drinking alcohol. And I thought, this is kind of this inception. It feels like an inception point, only because everywhere I turn, you know, par for the course, someone says, oh, I stopped drinking alcohol a while ago. And I thought, what is going on? So it feels like that's definitely happening for sure. But then there are these statistics that are coming out about Gen Z and how they're not having sex until a lot later. And it doesn't interest them. And I thought, well, you know, ever since they were kids, they've been bombarded with it in their faces since they were young, on TV, on the internet, like everywhere. Yeah. And stuff like that, it just becomes passe and boring after a while. So what is, I mean, yeah, I'm not a Gen Z, I'm a Gen X. And as everyone knows, we were latchkey kids and played video games, I think, because our parents were both working. Yeah. And had a lot of freedom. Yeah. And had mothers that stood on the back steps and screamed out into the neighborhood at the loudest pitch they could so that we would come home at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not Gen Z. I don't know what they're going through, but I do think that trend is fascinating. Mm-hmm. And hopefully will lead to, you know, just more respect or thoughtfulness around what sex with another human being looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get it.
I love that. Eventually we will get it. Yeah. And you were totally 100% spot on when you said that, like, there's nothing more for me, like, joyful or soul fulfilling or happy or just, I don't know, exciting about meeting another human being and getting to know them deeply, mm-hmm. intimately, that has no sex involved whatsoever.
That's the real gift that we give each other. You know, this, that father telling his daughter was a gift, garbage. But yeah, just to share yourself with another person and to appreciate and value that other person and have that reciprocated, that's really a gift.
Another episode of the Bite-Sized Blessings podcast. I need to thank my guest, Carl Beckstrand, for sharing such an intimate and vulnerable story and for teaching us that there are always new ways that we can approach issues in our lives, even issues where addiction is involved. There is always hope, and there are always answers to these questions that we seem to think might be insurmountable. There will be a link to his website in the episode show notes so you can check out all of the incredible offerings that he's bringing forth, not only from his own hands, because he certainly has many books on there that he's written, but also from other authors. I need to thank each and every one of you who listens to this podcast. It is a labor of love. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Carl. Be open to novel solutions to whatever issues or problems you have in your life. Even though it might be uncomfortable, even though it might be something that makes you cringe, maybe that solution is exactly what you need. So be open like Carl, be open to the mystery of what's unfolding around you, and take advantage of every solution and every opportunity that comes your way. Yeah, no, for sure. Wow. Thank you for sharing that story. I so appreciate it. I mean, I really appreciate it because it was vulnerable and because, I mean, no one's really ever talked about that before on the show at all, but also it was very brave of you. Thank you.
Well, I'm extra bold. I'm fearless now.
I love that. I think each and every one of us can hopefully, I'm crossing my fingers and toes here, reach a point where we can say that, right? In our lives?
Yeah.
Because that means freedom, I think.
Yeah. It's an evolution to a new level of liberty, you know, of freedom. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, you know, the other deepest wish I have for everyone is that we can all just be ourselves, you know?
Yep.
Someday I just envision this worldwide parade that happens and everyone is walking down the street with their little freak flags flying. And we're all just rejoicing that everyone gets to be who they actually are with no judgment.
Yep.
One can hope.
I think we'll get there.